That's it.
That's it.
That's it. Okay. Now.
So we're moving to Part E, but just to summarize, those are the all of the edits, our response to all of the edits that would result in a edit to the order based upon the input from Farmers for Water Quality. We do have additional edits, which are shown on the yellow sheet, which we'll discuss later, which are a result of board member discussion.
Okay. Now, are you moving to E right now? Because there's some other pages in here that don't involve E, I believe.
Yeah,
like they've got a paragraph 61, page 25. I'm assuming you're not in agreement with adding that language. Oh, because it does.
That's part E.
That is part E. Okay. Gotcha. All right.
There was also some groundwater monitoring stuff, and maybe that's going to be covered in your Part E also. Attachments 2A, B, and C.
That specific edit also relates to some changes related to board member discussion, so we'll capture those in a moment.
Okay, so with respect to attachment E, it was
is it attachment or part?
Or part E, sorry.
Part E, thank you.
Language was proposed to add new part E, and the board directed us to evaluate that language and to consider the pros and cons and answer the question about what would be the most effective order.
Question.
So the pros that
question.
We. Yes.
I have a question. Can you tell me the title of Part E and where I can find it in the order so I'm sure that I understand what we're talking about? In this case, I do want to know where I am in the document.
In the slides? She asked for the order.
Okay, you're asking where in the order? Okay, page 26. This is where they are recommending to insert.
It's not in the order.
A new Part E.
It's their PowerPoint with
right.
The new.
But what I'm saying is we already have a Part E. We do not. On page 26,
yeah.
There is a Part E.
It would replace their proposed attachment B with a new Part E.
But where does the new Part E belong? That's
it
what.
It would renumber, reletter. So
yes.
E, it would be a new E, and then E would become F.
Become F. Okay, that's what I wasn't clear on. Okay, got it.
So they would replace the Part E that's in the waiver with their Part E.
No, they're replacing their. They're making some changes to their attachment B. Their third-party group proposal that they submitted in March and May, they're proposing changes to that, and that's going to be E. It would be a new E, and then E would become F, and F would become G.
Okay, the reason I'm a little bit confused is because the title of their Part E is pretty much the same as the title of our existing Part E. So you'd have an E and an F that have the same title.
There is a difference. Theirs title says additional conditions that apply to Tier 2 and Tier 3 dischargers. This is what's new, through participation in third-party group. And ours, which does not say per third-party group, will become Part F. Wait a minute.
Okay, so the pros. of the new party, of the new language that was proposed. There is more detail here on a potential coalition concept, and that's a good thing. It looks like that they did more work on it, thought about it more, and provided a little bit more detail. So we thought that was a good thing. And we also think that coalitions could be very helpful in the overall implementation of the order, the Water Board's order. And that would include any order. That includes the 2004 order or this proposed 2012 order. We think they could help tremendously with education, assistance, outreach, coordination, and grants, inspections, providing incentives, awards, collaboration, and leveraging of their efforts with others. We think the coalitions also could help facilitate broad-scale implementation, and that includes Dr. Los Huertos' ideas. And I specifically call them ideas because they are ideas. They're not developed. They're just concepts or ideas that he has been working on for some time. And as he has said, he's not actually working for anyone right now. They're just his ideas. And we've talked to him about this individually outside these board hearings about where he actually stands with this. And he's told us he does not have support. He does not have an infrastructure, does not have an organization, or the support from any organization to implement what he's talking about doing. He's told us it is purely an idea. And I'm not trying to knock the idea. I'm just trying to put it in the context of how he is presenting it. Because there's we heard a lot yesterday and at the last workshop that we really want you to implement Dr. Los Huertos' proposal. And it's not a proposal that can be implemented. You also heard from Sarah Lopez yesterday about the Quail Creek project that she did with Preservation Inc. And we think that the work that they did there to reduce loading is great. And we think that coalitions could cause more of that type of work to be done. And we would be very supportive of that. You also heard from Ross Clark, who talked about wetland treatment systems. And I don't know if I got the name of his organization correct there. I just was going by memory. So.
Yeah, I think it's Central Coast Watershed Group.
Oh, Central Coast Watershed Group. Sorry about that. So the kind of work that Ross Clark was talking about, we are highly supportive of. We agree with his presentation, and we think it was outstanding. I think the work that he's doing and is proposing to do is outstanding, and we will do everything that we possibly can to help him implement those types of projects. And we think coalitions would be a big help in doing that. I actually think they would be necessary to do it, the kind of collaboration that they could provide. The cons? That it is still a concept, though we think it is a concept that could be done. And so by saying it's a concept, I'm not trying to be overly critical. I'm not trying to kill the idea. I actually hope that it is developed and that we do implement it, or that the industry does implement it. And there may be more than one coalition. We don't know at this point. We're still missing key indicators of pollution reduction and practice effectiveness. The language that is proposed is not what Dr. Los Huertos was proposing. Even though what he was proposing was in concept, it's not the same thing. And there's also, or it's not the same as what Sarah Lopez did and what she described. There's a lot, and if you were to look at the Preservation Inc. project that Sarah implemented, it's already done. That project is already done. There's a great amount of detail there. And it's a scientifically based project. It's statistically significant. The design is based on science and achieving statistically significant results. That kind of approach, that kind of information is not included in this concept. And again, I don't mean to be overly critical here. I'm just trying to point out that what the context is for this language. And there also isn't a point of compliance which we discuss in our order, our draft order. There's also no risk-based prioritization criteria, such as what we have in our order. No milestones or targets within the term of the order. The time frames presented are too long. These orders, like the one before the board and the 2004 order, have a five-year term. They have to be renewed in 5 years for a reason. We are required to, or in order to be consistent with the law, we need to determine the effectiveness of the order. So at the end of 5 years, we need to be able to say to the board and the public and ourselves and the growers how effective that order is. We need to know that so that when we renew it, we can make changes that are necessary to ensure that the order is effective.
Are you, Michael, referring to the 2015 date that was proposed as unacceptable because it's too long term?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Okay.
In here we have a replacement for our timeline with this first milestone at 8 years out. Okay. I have to look at it to tell you what the other ones are.
I think there was an 8-15.
Yeah, maybe that's what it
is. Is that
in Part G? Is that revised in Part G, the time frame?
Part H replacing our Part G with time schedules that are outside the term of the order, 5 years, and 8 years, and I think Roger's correct, 15.
Can you explain the difference between milestones, targets, and timeframes? Because when I see the timeframes that they suggested, I kind of thought of those as milestones. But can you explain the difference?
I think we're using milestones and targets interchangeably, so maybe we didn't need two words there. So, or maybe another way to say it is a milestone is a target plus a time frame. So, what are we trying to achieve? That's a target, and what's the time frame that we want to achieve it, or the date we want to achieve it by? So we have, for example, indicate pollution reduction with some indicators by a set date. So it's fair to say that they also have some targets with time frames. I think you're calling those milestones now, but they're 8 years and 15 years out.
So when you say no milestones / targets, is that true or did they have some?
Okay, let me clarify. You have to read the other part of the phrase, within the term of the order. There's nothing proposed as a set goal that we would measure something by in terms of pollution reduction or effectiveness of management practices with a date that is in the term of the order, the way the language is written.
So they may have a target of certifying at least 20% of the participating farms to an audit, but that certification, that target, is not a water quality numeric target. It's a process target. Sort of.
I agree with your assessment, but I wasn't trying to distinguish between water quality and other types of targets here. And now you're raising a slightly different issue, which is to the extent that there are some, we'll call them process targets to use your term, they're not reported, or they're reported at such a high level that they won't tell us how much progress we're making at pollution reduction or advancing towards water quality improvement.
Lisa, back from the mic just a hair.
Okay, so by high level, you mean aggregate. They're reported at an aggregate level that doesn't allow us to understand what's happening. I don't know what you mean by high.
Yeah, okay. As far as the language that is in here to be added to the order, that remains unclear. But when I say high level, aggregate it's not just aggregate that's high level. It's what scale and what's the indicator that we're aggregating the information. So, but I am think talking about things like numbers of growers or types of practices.
Okay.
And we chair.
Yeah. Go ahead. Just a quick question here. So is this list of cons the list of policy and legal issues which would have to be resolved to utilize this concept, or is that coming separately?
These things would have to be resolved, yes.
I understand. So this is that list.
that I was asking for last night. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I want to let you walk through it, and then I've got some questions about different things.
Okay. I have to jump in, if I could, Chair, because I don't see all these as legal. You know, having risk-based prioritization criteria, is that a legal requirement?
Well, they're going to get to that, whether it's legal or not.
They just did get to that. They said, I think, that everything up there are legal requirements. That's what I think I heard.
Francis. No, I think he said there were some policy, some legal.
Okay. I missed that.
Yeah.
Yep. So the next thing is that we don't think the language is responsive to the threat to human health. And that includes not focusing on, because it does not focus on shallow groundwater, where most domestic wells are located and where the threat to human health is greatest. There are no targets or indicators of nitrate loading reduction. No advanced requirements for higher risk operations. So operations where the threat is greater, which is how our order is designed. And the last item there, the language and the approach does not meet the legal standard. And we talked to our attorney about this last night and this morning. And the board, as members of the board said yesterday, that the board counsel's advice is a high bar. And just so you know, from staff's perspective, it's the bar. When we have conflicting attorneys, our attorneys giving conflicting interpretations, we take the advice of the board's legal counsel. We don't take the advice of other counsel. So I don't know if you wanted to jump in here, Francis.
I don't know. Do you want to hear my... These are a couple issues that I had identified as some of the concerns I have with their proposal. So, okay. So the first one is that Ms. Dunham has expressed the concern that the proposed order would somehow be interpreted to require immediate compliance with water quality standards, because it says discharger shall comply with water quality standards and protect beneficial uses and prevent nuisance. And my comment on that has been that it's the language in the existing order, it's the language in all the other orders adopted by other regional boards regarding compliance with water quality standards. It's the requirement of the law that they comply with water quality standards. Where the issue has come up is that there seems to be this view that the language means that, assuming the board adopts something today, that tomorrow everybody's going to be out of compliance. But there are numerous, with the water quality standards, there are numerous provisions in the order, both in the findings and in the order part, that make it clear that for purpose, and in the state water board's policy on non-point source, for non-point sources, compliance with water quality standards means to implement management practices if they aren't effective in reducing discharges to meet water quality standards, that they revise or do new management practices. And it's been made clear in the order. It's the same language in the Central Valley order that we've used, or that's proposed, the staff has proposed, and is currently in the order. It has not resulted. It's the same language that's in the coalition group waiver for in the Central Valley. It has not resulted in any enforcement actions for not complying with water quality standards. So my recommendation that it not be changed, because it implements a law and it's been carefully defined within the order. Tess proposed a different way to address that issue in her proposal, which is the paragraphs 21 and 22. And there are ways to write it in the way she's proposed, but it would take some rewriting because of some issues that she's raised by her proposed rewrites. And I would, if you want to consider her proposal. I'd be happy to talk about what I would change about her proposal, but I think I really think it's working the way it's working. It's a requirement of the law to require compliance with water quality standards. That's the basic standard of every discharger in the state, is to comply with water quality standards. And in the case of non-point source pollution, it's an iterative process to do management practices and then make them better. And there's nothing in the order that would require them to be in compliance tomorrow, and it's made very clear.
Well, through the chair, if I may, if she had suggestions that you just said were workable, that also satisfy your needs and our needs, then why wouldn't we take a look at those?
Well, that's what I said. I did look at them. They would require significant rewrites because she's introduced new issues. She's changed other things in the order in response to those changes, so it's not just like one thing. It's like going to a whole bunch of different places. Okay, fix that. Now go fix that. Now go fix that. And if you want me to do that, I can do that, but I just, you know, I want to just tell you that I don't think it's necessary to address the concern, and the language works the way it is. So that's one of the legal issues.
Mr. Johnston.
Yes, just a suggestion on process, Mr. Chair, because I know none of us want to be here at midnight tonight. You know, staff has done an impressive job of responding to a tremendous volume of stuff. I suggest that we let them finish their presentation, and to the extent that we don't understand stuff that they're presenting, that we ask questions so we understand it. And I think that there's some other proposed edits that they have, and we let them run through their whole presentation, and we ask questions as we need to understand it. And then we circle back around and we talk about whether we as a board want to consider trying to implement some version of what we heard yesterday from Tess. And if we decide we do, then I think we need to run through point by point. I think this is the list of the legal and policy considerations that would have to be resolved, and to the policy considerations to our satisfactions, and the legal considerations certainly I want to satisfy Francis here. You know, that's what we pay her for. I suggest we just run on through, ask questions as we need to understand, and then circle back around and see how much we want to dig into this.
That's fine. So go ahead. But Francis had some more, I think,
I talked about the other one. That's the view that the proposal is to delete the provision of the staff report, the staff proposal that they provide their farm plans upon request to the board, and they have proposed to not allow that to happen, and I have already described my legal concern with that it's undermining your own authority to get technical reports submitted to the board, and that I would not recommend that. And the Central Valley's order has that. Your current order has that. I don't see any need to delete that, and would undermine your own authority, which I don't recommend that you undermine your own authority.
Okay, Michael.
So that's the second point. Lacks reporting requirements. What about the cannot be a shield? Can you just?
I think there is a great improvement with the newer version of the now Part E, and as far as the role of the third party groups in clarifying that individuals are ultimately responsible. There are some areas that sort of create some ambiguity about that, but under the water code, a person who discharges waste is required to submit a report of waste discharge, or in this case, a notice of intent, and either obtain waste discharge requirements or a waiver of waste discharge requirements. It's the individual discharger's responsibility under the law to comply with the law. So you can't have a third-party group that shields the individual from the compliance with the law. And so some of the ways that it was written in the previous version appeared to try to do that. And which is somewhat surprising because I would think the third-party group would not want to be taking on the responsibility that's really assigned to the individual discharger. So that was a little interesting. But I think the newer version does clarify some of those things that the individual discharger is ultimately responsible, but there are some areas that could be clarified better. So that was my other concern.
Go ahead, Michael.
So our recommendation regarding this new language, new Part E, is that, and this is not our final recommendation of the day, this is our just the recommendation regarding this particular language, that we cannot recommend adding, I should have said Part E there, this language in the order. We can't recommend it for the reasons I said on the previous slide. However, we want to make it clear, if we haven't made it clear before, that we encourage third-party groups to develop alternative implementation approaches with the key elements on the previous slide. And we also think the technical advisory committee is a good idea. That was mentioned in that proposed language. So the question that was asked yesterday.
Before you go, Mr. Jordan has a
yes.
question for clarification.
Before yes. Before you left that last page, I'm curious, other than the legal items that Francis has identified and the strict policy items that you've identified, is everything else on that page or everything on the prior cons page able to be folded into the existing order the way it's already written?
Yes.
Thank you.
And that's where I was going.
Sorry.
That's good. Good question. So the question that was asked yesterday, what is the most effective order to improve water quality and meet legal standards? And there's a typo there. I'm sorry about that. We were working on this late. So what's the answer? An order that includes the things that we have been talking about and emphasizing to the board for years now. Key indicators of pollution reduction and practice effectiveness. Risk-based prioritization criteria. Milestones or targets within the term of the order so that we can demonstrate progress at reducing pollution loading. We need to be responsive to the human health threat. It's our highest priority. We cannot put language into this order that diminishes or undermines the board's authority. Diminishes that priority or undermines the board's authority. We need to focus on shallow groundwater, and targets are indicators of nitrate loading reduction. We have to have advanced requirements for higher risk. This is how the board conducts its business on every program that it implements. And the language or the approach must be consistent with law and policies, or it's not defensible. We also need to include in our order, in order for it to be effective, an option to implement alternatives that are equivalent or better than what we are proposing. Because there are other options that are equivalent and better than what we are proposing. And the industry can develop those. And so we have tried to make the order as flexible as we can. We've tried to include language to encourage and promote these alternatives. And we welcome the industry's effort to do it. We currently have timelines in the order, and one of the edits that we are proposing that we'll get to in a few minutes is to extend those deadlines that are in the order to further promote the development of these third-party alternatives that would be submitted to the executive officer. That would be submitted to the executive officer for approval. We want them. We want them to meet these requirements. So we've designed the order to do that, and it's not unusual. Many of the orders that this board adopts and has adopted over the past years, over many years, includes this approach, where the board establishes requirements and says, or an alternative that is equivalent or better, and allows the industry or the responsible party to develop that. that is the most effective order that we can have, to set standards and allow alternatives. If you want to see alternatives from third-party groups that meet the law and that have the conditions that we've talked about, then adopting the order with that option is the way to go. Continuing to delay is going to result in a continuation of what we have had over the past 3.5 years. We continue to argue about these things. We continue to have opposing legal arguments, and we're stuck. Okay. Other edits?
Let me just say something. It's okay to have opposing legal arguments. Ultimately, the board needs to weigh those and decide where it wants to go with that. Mm-hmm. Right?
It's okay to have opposing... Sure, it's okay to have opposing legal arguments. I don't think it's okay for us to continue to delay and not implement actions that protect people that are threatened by this pollution. I don't think that's okay.
I understand that. Ryan.
So now I'm going to... what Michael put up here on the screen is a list of other edits that staff is recommending. And they also are reflected on your yellow sheet, so I'm going to talk about them in detail.
Angela, hold on 1 second. Mm-hmm. Dr. Hunter, do you want to quickly ask that question?
Okay, thank you. So, again, I'm trying to track how the proposed new Part E, which refers to and puts a lot of detail, more detail, as Michael said, from Attachment B. So that's an improvement. But where in the monitoring report section, which there's 1, 2, and 3, do we see the any kind of spelling out of how the third-party process will work, or do we have that? Because I'm not seeing it, but I just want to know, do we have something that's equivalent?
I don't think they proposed any edits to the monitoring and reporting program.
I know. Okay, so yeah. Let me ask that question a little differently. The only place that I see third party referenced is in additional findings number 10. Says it deals. That's where you deal with third party groups, and it refers to the monitoring program orders. And that's why I was wondering, is it in the monitoring program order, or is that the only place where you refer to third party groups?
She's referring to ours.
You're referring to our draft order. Yes.
Yes.
Correct. Okay.
It's in condition. Besides condition 10. I think finding 11 refers to cooperative. Oh, that's not monitoring. Sorry. Okay.
Mr. Chair, and
yes,
in attachment 2B, which is, for example, monitoring reporting program for Tier 2 on page 9, it talks about cooperative groundwater monitoring efforts to minimize costs. This is A6, page 9 of the Tier 2 monitoring program.
Okay. Page 9 of what?
The monitoring reporting program for Tier 2.
So what? It, on page 9, what number is it?
Number 6.
Okay, I have found it. Thank you.
Page 6.
Okay.
So, each tier monitoring program has that same number 6, apparently.
On page 9, paragraph 6, in each tier.
Okay. Thank you. I just need to get my bearings.
Okay, so now what you have in front of you on the yellow sheet are 4 pages of additional edits that staff is suggesting based upon the information submitted in by Farmers for Water Quality, as well as the discussion board member discussion yesterday. So we already went through a page and a half of them. So I'm going to start on page 2. It says paragraph 58, page 24 and 25. So you'll notice on the one above, paragraph 56, we already discussed that one about the NOI form and the edits to the NOI form. Paragraph 58 is the middle of page 2, the left-hand column.
And do you want the word "an" in front of appropriate?
Yes, sorry.
Correct.
In the appropriate tier.
All right.
So this one is that for dischargers who do not provide adequate information for the water board to confirm or determine the appropriate tier, the executive officer will place the farm ranch in the appropriate tier based upon information submitted in the notice of intent. And I'm bringing this one up because this was left over from Tess's that we didn't address. So her concern was that farms would be automatically placed in the higher tier. And we agree. And so we are suggesting an additional edit that they would be placed in the appropriate tier based upon the information submitted in the notice of intent. The second change, and this was in response to...
Excuse me, Angela.
Yes.
Through the chair, back to that point, I think sometimes the notice of intent will be incomplete and not allow the executive officer, based on that standalone document, to make a determination. I mean, that's a possibility I could foresee. So if this would say place the farm ranch in the appropriate tier based upon either information submitted in the notice of intent or further communication between the executive officer or staff and the applicant, that would be more thorough.
Okay, I can add that information or further communication with the grower regarding their enrollment. Okay, the next one is regarding the sampling of groundwater, individual groundwater sampling. And this actually is in response to a comment that was brought up by Board Member Wolf as a stakeholder. And his concern was about the need to have registered professionals conducting the groundwater sampling. And so we do suggest a change. We understand that comment. And the change is that we would delete the sections that say state registered professional engineer, professional geologist, or other similarly qualified professional, and replace that with a qualified third party, for example, technician, consultant, or individual conducting cooperative monitoring. So, for example, Preservation Inc. currently conducts surface water cooperative monitoring. Someone like that would be fine to conduct the groundwater sampling. You can bring this up, Donna, if you want to. Right, or a certified lab employee, for example. You can escape out of this and get this.
You can page for the document if you want to.
And then who would determine the qualifications necessary?
Well, it's the proper sampling methods and analytical. So someone who's qualified to do the sampling methods and
so who determines that? I mean, I might get a lesson from you, and you and I might agree that I'm now qualified. Am I qualified?
Well, what we intended to do is to hold a workshop or provide some assistance for growers at how it states very specifically how to conduct the sampling in the MRP. We would have some assistance about that, and then as long as it was a third party familiar and who could implement those methods, they would be a qualified third party. But it's deliberately flexible.
Okay.
Let me just offer some example here. When I used to grow oysters and I was taking water samples, the Department of Health Services showed me how to do it. And then I was responsible myself to go out, get a clean, sterilized jar from the lab, take it in a bag, go get my sample, fill out a label, and submit it, and that was okay. So, I mean, as long as you're going to be able to explain this to people, train them, they ought to be able to do it themselves. With some training, they could become qualified.
Well, it's also a cost savings.
It's a cost savings, and it makes it easier to do. So just consider that.
Okay.
That's a good example.
Yeah.
So the second one relates specifically to the Farmers for Water Quality's suggestion about clarification about the individual groundwater monitoring. So essentially, we agreed with their suggested edits, which are in the underline here. The parts that we added are in that last sentence of the second paragraph of strikeout, where it says, qualifying cooperative groundwater monitoring and reporting programs may include, but are not limited to, regional or sub-regional groundwater programs developed for other purposes as long as the proposed cooperative groundwater monitoring program meets the Water Board's general purpose of characterizing groundwater quality. That's where Farmers for Water Quality ended. What we'd like to do is to add, because this was in our original intent, and ensuring the protection of drinking water purposes. And ensuring the protection of drinking water sources. So that really is our general purpose of the individual groundwater monitoring. It's both to characterize groundwater quality and ensure the protection of drinking water sources. So that's the add-on. The other change that we made to the suggested edits. So on the third page, at the top of the page, where it says adequately characterize the groundwater aquifers in the local area participating discharges, we agree with that change to strike out represent and add the word characterize. Ms. Dunham had also suggested that we strike out characterize the groundwater quality of the uppermost aquifer. Staff disagrees with that strikeout. We feel it's very important for any cooperative groundwater monitoring program to also assess the uppermost aquifer. It's the most vulnerable to pollution. It's the aquifer that most domestic wells are tapped into, and any cooperative groundwater monitoring program must include that evaluation. Other than that, we agree with all of the other suggested edits, including the ones which gives them time here to submit the cooperative groundwater monitoring proposal. So you'll see that they have someone who wanted to do it cooperatively has a year to submit the proposal, and that's acceptable to staff. So the next suggested edit is the one that Michael specifically referenced, and that relates to the dates regarding individual discharge monitoring. So we understand that any cooperative effort, third-party effort, is going to require time. And so we want to be able to provide that time before some of the more burdensome requirements kick in. So, for example, for individual sampling analysis plan, We would like to revise that date to submit to be 1 year, March 15th, 2014, instead of the previous date, which was 6 months after adoption. In addition, we also are open to or suggesting the edit to revise the date to initiate the individual discharge monitoring, surface discharge monitoring, to be October 1st, 2013. So this extends individual to surface discharge monitoring 1.5 years. The previous date was October 1, 2012.
Angela? Mm-hmm. Yep. You back up one. Is that the right date there? Because it looks like you mean to say 2013.
Well, that's what I thought, but you said yeah, March 15, 2014.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you're correct. Thank you for catching that important clarification.
So that's the first one, the first date change that Angela was talking about.
Submit the individual sampling analysis plan.
Right. Revised date to submit individual sampling analysis plan to March 15, 2013. It's consistent with the 1 year from today.
And that is a 6 month extension compared to the status quo.
That's correct. That's to submit the plan. And then an additional extension for the actually initiating the sampling, which is the next one. So, in addition, we're also revising dates to submit or to report the individual surface water discharge monitoring to March 15th, 2014. The previous date was October 1, 2013. So this basically provides 2 years to submit the data. So it allows growers 2 years to consider and start implementing an alternative before they have to report any individual discharge monitoring data. So in summary for those three, all relate to individual discharge monitoring for surface water. The date to submit the plan would be March 15th, 2013. The date to start sampling would be October 1st, 2013. And the date to submit any reporting would be March 15, 2014, 2 years after today. In addition, staff is also recommending to delete the date of implementation for the irrigation nutrient management plan to allow for the flexibility of considering alternatives before the development of that plan. The previous date was October 1, 2013. So we would just suggest.
So you leave it open-ended with no date?
Leave that one open-ended with no date. They develop and implement that plan at their discretion. However, the next one is regarding the reporting the elements of the irrigation nutrient management plan. So here we're suggesting to move the date for reporting the elements of the irrigation nutrient management plan by 1 year. So currently it's October 1,
2013.
This is wrong. October 1, 2014. And it would move to October 1, 2015. That previous date notation there is wrong in the note. So those are the suggested edits that relate to dates. All those dates were extended out to allow for the opportunity for the development of alternatives, third-party groups, or certifications, cooperative efforts. We've also are suggesting some additional edits in response to the hearing discussion yesterday. The next one relates to the nutrient balance ratios as a target versus a milestone. In response to the discussion yesterday, staff is suggesting that we go ahead and make the nitrogen balance ratio a milestone and not a compliance condition. So the edit then is, by October 1, 2015, dischargers with high nitrate loading risk must report the progress towards the following nitrogen balance ratio milestones, instead of must achieve the milestones. So they have to still report the ratio at a certain date, but it's moving from a to a milestone instead of a compliance condition.
So when you say report progress towards, that means any amount of positive numeric progress.
That's correct. And in the next edit would be moving the conditions to achieve nitrate balance ratio to the specific table. So they go from the compliance table, compliance conditions table, to table 4. And what table 4 states in the order is that these milestones will be used to evaluate progress towards water quality improvement. So that milestone is still how we're going to measure progress. But it's not a compliance condition to achieve it.
Is it safe, is it accurate to say that targets are requirements and milestones are suggestions? Because it seems like now we're saying there is a difference between targets and milestones, whereas earlier it was they were interchangeable words.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think the key thing is not so much the word target, but be consistent with Table 4, which we called milestones, as opposed to meet targets. And that implies, and the heading of the table, I think, was compliance. So you put all that together.
But for the purpose of understanding this on the part of the growers especially, it would be nice if they knew the difference, because we knew the difference between targets and milestones. So if there is a policy difference, it would be nice to know that consistent policy difference.
So what you're inferring is that the language of milestones be consistent throughout the order? That means the same thing?
Well, it sort of. If there is a difference, let's say that targets were things that had to be met to be compliant, but milestones were time frames that were more wishy-washy, or if there was any other consistent difference, it's just important to me that the growers are able to understand.
I understand, and I appreciate that. And the statement earlier in the presentation that, at least I understood, that targets and milestones were interchangeable by the staff and interpretation. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, maybe we need to clarify something. This is the only indicator or place where we use the term target. It's a descriptor for this thing called the nutrient balance ratio.
Yeah, but
and we want it to be a milestone.
Yeah, so I think I can
versus
explain
a condition.
It. The difference is that in Table 3, there's a time schedule. For example, submit your photo monitoring. So that's a specific date. So if they submit it on that date, by that date, they're in compliance. They wouldn't be subject to enforcement. So those compliance dates, the way I understand it, is that they're clearly enforceable dates. Whereas a milestone is, this is information provided to the board so they can see if progress is being made, but it's not going to be an enforceable requirement. So if they don't show progress, they're not going to be hit with enforcement. It's just, okay, now you need to look at more what you can do to show improvements, right?
So then are targets enforceable?
Well, target was only the word used for that thing, and there's no other use of the word target, so it's,
okay.
It goes away essentially.
So in the ag order and the associated MRP, the target comes up in one instance, and in that instance it's enforceable, but otherwise target's not used. Instead, milestones are used.
That was because you said yesterday that was the only the nitrogen target was the only enforceable thing of that sort.
The implication I got was it was in a table labeled conditions.
Right.
And we have moved it from a table labeled conditions to a table labeled milestones, and said it will be, we stated specifically it's going to be used to measure, that you're required to, or excuse me, we said specifically that you must report progress in the direction of that.
Right.
So we've moved it from being a condition you have to meet to something you have to progress towards.
Right, and so before, I mean, the way it was originally proposed, if you didn't meet that 1 or 1.2 or other alternative that was approved by that date, you would be out of compliance. Right? Okay.
That's correct. And actually, Rogers said it simply before that. The only reason that changed the wording from target to milestone was because it was going to the milestone table. Otherwise, there wasn't really a distinction. It's compliance condition versus a milestone.
So just to beat a dead horse then, there is no longer the word target in any of the papers before us as far as something you have to meet.
Right.
Okay.
That's what we intend.
Mm-hmm. Well, as long as you go to the next change, which is to make the monitoring and reporting program for Tier 3 consistent.
Right. Right. There's the use of the word target in there. It's the same change. It's just in the MRP. Okay, so that brings me to our last edit. And that is, again, I already just started discussing this one. That's in response to Mr. Sanchez's comment about his concerns related to small disadvantaged growers, especially those that might be non-English speaking. And we agree. We would like to prioritize those types of growers for assistance. And we would like to actually add a finding to the order that states, the Central Coast Water Board recognizes that certain disadvantaged farmers may have difficulties to achieve compliance with this order. The Central Coast Water Board will prioritize assistance for these farmers, including but not limited to technical assistance, grant opportunities, and necessary flexibility to achieve compliance with this order, e.g. adjusted monitoring, reporting, or time schedules. So if that issue comes up, that's how we would handle it. And actually, the USDA has a definition for growers called the limited resource farmer definition, and those are the types of farmers that they prioritize for assistance for EQIP funds and other types of grant opportunities.
Angela, how is a disadvantaged farmer going to be able to interpret this if they're non-speaking English?
We have increased our efforts to conduct outreach with the non-English speaking community of growers. Our latest example of doing that is working with the Chinese chrysanthemum speakers. And so we're really trying to coordinate with the commodity groups to identify where that need is. And it's actually, that's an example of success. So we've increased enrollment in that segment of the agricultural industry where it was not there before.
How about for Spanish speakers?
Well,
I understand that. I just want to know what mechanism do you have right now in place should a Spanish-speaking farmer call the board to get some help or direction? Is there someone that...
Right now we have two full-time staff who are Spanish-speaking who are actually in the ag program. All of it's standard now for all of our letters to have the language on top of the letter that states that if you need Spanish translation or Spanish assistance, to call the numbers of those staff. We've also held, I think, 3 or 4 Spanish-speaking workshops throughout the region, north and south.
Have they been attended?
They have been. Actually, I Monica can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think those have been the most well-attended, is with those grower groups.
Has anyone called to speak to our Spanish-speaking staff? Yes?
Sí.
Yes, all the time is what she said.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be some of those folks that are going to fall through the cracks, and I think that's some of the folks that Mr. Sanchez was referring to that are afraid to step forward for one reason or another and to ask or even inquire what they're supposed to do. So that's, and I don't want to speak for him, but that's what I took for some of his comments, that there's folks out there that are farming, whatever type of farming they're doing, haven't attended any of these workshops, and now they're afraid that there's going to be some order which means some kind of liability to them and that they don't understand. So is the form also in Spanish and Chinese? And
all of our electronic notice of intent forms are all in Spanish. They've all been distributed to the commodity groups where there are Spanish-speaking growers that we know of, for example, the Alba Group. That's just one example, as well as the local farm bureaus, for example, the Kachuma RCD. We've worked with them to have distribute our documents in Spanish. We hear the concern, and our intent is to provide a higher level of assistance and prioritize assistance for those growers.
I realize that we can't cover all the bases, but eventually I'm sure we'll discover those folks as they
pop up. Yeah.
And many are already enrolled. So I don't want you to leave you with the impression that those types of groups are underrepresented. They actually are very well represented. I don't know. I'm sure that we don't have all of them, but they check a box on the notice of intent right now that states what English, what languages are speaking preference, and there are many non-English speaking growers in that database.
Mr. Delgado?
Yes, I thought I heard you say that the USDA definition is for something slightly differently worded than disadvantaged farmers. So if that's true, why don't we call it what they call it?
If that was a late edit. We were trying to find the actual language. So that was my recalling of what the definition was. But yes, you're...
So what were those two words instead of disadvantaged farmers?
It's... I could pass this out, actually, if you wanted to. But it's called limited resource farmer.
Limited resource farmers. See USDA definition. Is that your preferred language at this point?
Well, that was just a reminder to me to look at that definition so we can strike out the CUSDA.
Well, I like the CUSDA definition because then
perfect.
Everybody
we'll keep it.
Knows that it exists.
Okay.
And then my other question on this was, if I was a Caucasian grower, I might feel slighted that grants and technical assistance opportunities would be prioritized for somebody else. And so I just want to make sure that that's both legal and fair in your mind.
Well, actually, it was very difficult for us to articulate what disadvantage means, which is why we are relying upon an existing definition. And the existing definition actually doesn't specify language, ethnicity, anything like that. It's based upon... The standard practice of looking at median household income and other indicators.
Needs-based.
Right, and it specifically says that they can't discriminate based on race, color,
right.
or national origin, all that stuff.
But they can discriminate in a way based upon economic status, socioeconomic status. That's what you're telling us is legal.
The Act authorizes the Secretary to set aside 5% of available EQIP funds in CSP acres for socially disadvantaged farmers or ranchers.
Socially disadvantaged. So those are different words than limited.
Well, the beginning of it refers to limited resource farmers or ranchers. I mean, it's a federal law that deals with limited resource farmers or ranchers and then provides... a certain percentage of funds for a certain limited resource and beginning farmers or ranchers, et cetera.
Okay. So that sounds more fair that if I was a higher income ranch grower that was having trouble implementing this, that there might be 95% of the money still available for people like me and 5% is set aside for people that are in a lower socioeconomic status than I.
Correct. That's what it appears, yeah.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Jordan?
Actually, I want to back up a couple squares if everybody's done with that subject. So, okay. Angela, could you tell me quickly, going back up to the tops on the nitrate date changes, just a couple sentences, what the difference is between
developing an irrigation and nutrient management program and submitting the elements. What does that mean?
Well, we require them to develop a plan,
right,
the irrigation nutrient management plan, and then we also require them to report specific elements.
Okay. And so you're proposing then to eliminate the first part of that and just give them a window to submit, right?
What we are proposing to do is to eliminate the date specified for developing the plan. They still have to develop the plan.
Correct.
Right.
There's just no intermediary milestone timeline target.
That's correct. It provides full flexibility for when to develop that plan.
And that only applies to a subset of Tier 3, right?
That's correct. It only would apply to a subset of the Tier 3 farms, approximately, if I can recall from yesterday, 61.
Okay. But that subset was developed specifically to recognize a higher risk even within Tier 3, correct?
That is correct.
So it seems like a significant give back, and I'm wondering what discussions took place on that issue.
It is a very significant compromise. That's correct.
Would you like to share any discussions that were? Well, so here's my point, and then you can decide. Is that if staff is willing to give that back, okay. But the particular line where it talks about the strikeout of must meet and then is replaced with must report progress towards, that to me is a historical line that should be remembered in 3 years when you start to work on the next order, because that's indicative right there that if conditions continue to worsen, that was clearly a point of give back for consideration at this point, and that it could have been worse at this time. Does that make sense? Or could have been more stringent at this time. Worse is probably not the right word.
It does, yes, I agree. And the conversation that we had about it, we go around and around about whether we should or shouldn't reduce these requirements further or extend these due dates further. And in the interest of promoting this coalition effort, you know, we said, what can we change in the order that would promote it and would allow for opportunity and time for people to do that? We didn't want to, correct me if I'm wrong here, Angela, we didn't want to set up a situation where people were trying to do both, where they're working on the requirements in the order and trying to set up a coalition or trying to meet requirements of a coalition at the same time. So we wanted to give space to develop that coalition process.
It seems to me to be a huge carrot you're dangling out there, and obviously, we went by it really quick, and I'm surprised that nobody had any opinions on it. But it would also seem to put the ball in the other party's court, and they better do something with that ball that leads to results, or else the next time you look at this, the language reverts back to a more stringent language. So, just my 2 cents.
Okay, what more does staff have for us?
Those are all the suggested changes. I think
okay.
There's some other discussion.
Any other rebuttal for staff? I mean, any other comments to us on anything else you've heard?
Okay. There were other issues that came up yesterday, and so what we would, I'm going to back up here. So instead of going into the issues that came up and rebutting, we're willing to just let it go and go to our final recommendation. I would request, though, that we be allowed to, if you take a 5-minute break, 5 or 10 minute break, so that we can talk to the executive officer and formulate our final recommendation.
Okay. Mr. Johnston?
Before we do that, and presumably after the final recommendation, we're going to circle back around and talk about, as a policy as well as a legal matter, how, if and how we want to approach the stuff that was given to us yesterday. I have a couple of minor things I'd like to run by staff that came out of comments. And I don't have something printed on this, but it's pretty simple. This first one,
In the order on page 7, paragraph 27, I had it a minute ago. The way that paragraph reads right now, landowners and operators of irrigated lands who obtain a pesticide use permit from a local county agricultural commissioner may have a discharge of waste that could affect surface water and groundwater and therefore must submit to the Central Coast Water Board a completed electronic notice of intent to comply with the conditions of this order to comply with the water code. What that basically says is if you obtain a pesticide use permit, whether there's any surface water or even whether you're irrigating or not, you must file a notice of intent. And it seems like, well, here's my proposed changes to that, and I just want you guys to, if you need to talk about them when you're talking with the executive officer, that's fine.
Well, hold on. I think before you get to there, this is conditioned upon it being irrigated lands, which would mean that someone has to be irrigating ag.
Correct.
So that's a precondition.
Okay.
So
let me just tell you what my proposed change, and staff can talk about it, and they can see what they think. I want to remove the word may in the second line after agricultural commissioner and add the words and that. I want to, after surface water and before groundwater, replace the word and with the word or, and strike the words and therefore. And then it would read, landowners and operators of irrigated lands who obtain a pesticide use permit from a county agricultural commissioner and that have a discharge of waste that could affect surface water or groundwater must submit to the Central Coast Water Board a completed notice of intent, yada, yada, yada. So talk about that. The second thing that was raised in comments yesterday and that I didn't hear a response to, and I would just like to get staff's take on it, is it was raised in comments that some piece of the irrigation plan has to be prepared by a certified crop advisor with a certificate in hydrology. There was a certified crop advisor who spoke and who said, you know, that's a really high bar and almost nobody has that.
It's gone.
And, oh, it's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
We said earlier that we were removing it.
I missed that.
Actually, you're correct. We heard that also and intended to strike that. We intended to strike it with the one about the collecting groundwater samples. And we did that one. But we had intended to strike out the language also that said CCA with a hydrogeology profession.
Certificate, right. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
One more thing, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Should also mention that in the original staff report, we recommended changes which had to do with, mostly administrative, had to do with the fact that the hearing has been delayed, so it changed a lot of dates. Some of those may be superseded by changes you just went over. And then didn't we have another supplemental sheet?
Yes.
I mean, besides.
That went out.
Chair, I have a small request for an edit.
A what?
A small request for an edit.
Before we do that, though, let's just, I want to make sure that. Yes, this one.
What is it? Which one?
Prepared March 6th.
Is that the one we have right here?
Is no, this is one.
Have you got that?
Was in the staff report.
You got that handy?
I don't have it with me. It should be in the board member folders.
It is. It is.
It was in the blue folders.
It's in our folder.
Was the subject the minutes?
Is it yellow?
Yes.
Yes, Tony Hoover's.
No, item number 4. It's a single page.
So proposed revisions. There's two proposed revisions. Is that the one? Page 6 and 12?
Yes.
I do not have that one.
Here.
It was in our little blue peachy folder, but
may have gotten lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, I didn't get it.
Is that it? The single piece there? The yellow page? That right there? No.
Can you share
yeah.
down there?
Yeah. Michael's already photocopying it.
Yeah, I don't have a copy.
You have yours. Okay. I think we can share here.
I probably had it too.
Is this one of them?
No, I don't have one.
Here, you can take mine. If you need a copy, there, copy.
Just want to make sure we had all the pieces. Okay, Mr. Chair.
Okay, what's the question that's pending?
Mine was in the additional findings, that is attachment 1B, page 6, finding number 20 regarding NPS policy. Yeah, attachment 1B, page 6, the 20th additional finding. Finding number 20. Yes.
What's the edit change?
It has the words never may, and so the sentence reads, management practice implementation never may be a substitute for meeting water quality requirements.
Instead of may never.
Instead of may never, or I would prefer it to say, is not necessarily a substitute for meeting water quality requirements.
And the language is from the non-point source policy, but you know what? I don't think it's an exact quote, so I would recommend that we say what's in the non-point source policy so I can check what it actually says to make sure it's
okay.
Inaccurate. So I don't think it says never may. So
It could say may never, or it could say something else.
Right. So I'll check it. And
okay. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to take a break, right, for about 10 minutes.